Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, August 12th. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall is on the Santa Fe Community College campus today hosting a conference on technology transfer. It seeks to find ways to spur innovation and create high-tech jobs in New Mexico by way of transferring technologies developed at our national labs and universities to private entrepreneurs. Speakers include former Senator Jeff Bingaman, along with the directors of both the Los Alamos and Sandia labs. Senator Udall plans to introduce a bill in Washington to facilitate public-private partnerships with federal, state, and local aid aimed at creating cutting-edge products and businesses. Governor Susana Martinez has announced the creation of a 70,000-acre binational master-planned community around the Santa Teresa-San Jeronimo border crossing. It's the first of its kind venture to encompass two countries with infrastructure development for worldwide business relocations. Martinez noted the favorable location as the midway point between seaports in Long Beach, California, and Houston, Texas. Chihuahua, Mexico Governor Cesar Duarte also welcomes the project that will likely see a launch of a pilot program of a dual customs clearance facility between the U.S. and Mexico. The U.S. Army has doubled down on its opposition to the proposed 500-mile-long SunZia Southwest Transmission Project across southern New Mexico. They say a 45-mile stretch of it would be disruptive to operations at the White Sands Missile Range. The Army had first stated its concerns to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management earlier this year. The BLM will render a final decision next month, and the Albuquerque Journal reports that the U.S. Army sent an official notice of objection last week. SunZia has been in the works since 2008, and the project manager says any rerouting now will kill the $1.2 billion project, as new environmental studies would take years to complete. Santa Fe this week hosts the 92nd Annual Indian Market, the week-long celebration of Native arts and culture, anchored by the upcoming weekend's Native Arts Market on the Plaza, is the largest cultural event of its kind in the Southwest. The Southwestern Association for Indian Arts sponsors the event, which it says brings more than 80,000 people to the state and region, generating over $100 million in revenue. A reminder, Santa Fe Public Schools begins the new school year on Wednesday for students in grades 1 through 12. Kindergarten students will start classes on Friday. At today's meeting of Santa Fe's Public Works and Land Use Committee, they'll consider a resolution that would allow collaboration with local nonprofit organizations for the creation of farm stands that would sell fresh produce from community gardens and orchards. The measure has previously received support from the Sustainable Santa Fe Commission and the Food Policy Council. It's headed toward full city council at the end of the month. A report just made to New Mexico's Legislative Interim Committee on Investments says that 24 made-in-New-Mexico film projects between 2002 and 2008 made almost no money for the state. They were all given interest-free loans as part of incentives that were discontinued in 2011. In total, the 24 projects received $243 million in such loans. All repaid their principal, but only two reported profits, paying New Mexico just $1.3 million. The Farmington Daily Times reports that one five-year $15 million loan is still outstanding, that for the two-season TV series Crash. The city of Santa Fe is giving advance notice of a temporary closure of the Genoveva Chavez Community Center for thorough annual maintenance. The basketball gymnasium and track will be closed beginning 1 week from today on Monday, August 19th. The entire facility shuts down on Saturday, August 24th, and reopens just after Labor Day on Tuesday, September 3rd. During the closure, GCCC members can use the Fort Marcy Complex and Salvador Perez Pool. A heads up to local motorists as County Road 73, Tusuki Village Road, today begins a lane reconfiguration project expected to last several days. New bicycle lanes are being striped in a work zone that extends north at US 84 285, approximately 1 mile to the bridge before the Tusuki Village Market. The road will remain open at all times, though there will be intermittent lane closures. And weather for Santa Fe, a 40% chance for showers and thunderstorms today under partly sunny skies, high temperatures in the upper 70s. A drying trend sets in for the remainder of the week with just slight chances for precipitation and daily highs from the upper 70s to the low 80s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 67 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. With our population growing older and the economy slow to fully recover, more and more people, including New Mexicans, must seek affordable public housing. A grant from the Housing and Urban Development Department is going to help a number of housing agencies in our state make improvements on their public housing assets. Sandra Enriquez is the Assistant Secretary for Public and Indian Housing at HUD and joins us now. Ms. Enriquez, let's start by having you tell us about this grant.
Every year, under a congressional appropriation, once the Congress is acted, we provide for public housing agencies both operating and capital dollars. And the announcement that's recently been made is the awarding of capital money for physical improvements in public housing units across the nation. And in that award, the 36 public housing authorities in New Mexico got a total of just under $5.4 million for capital improvements of their units.
Exactly what is the money to be used for?
This is for repair of existing public housing for capital improvements. However, I would say that if housing authorities wanted to undertake a more substantial renovation or wanted to actually do some construction of replacement units because their existing units might have aged past their useful life, they could take some of this money and do a financing and particularly do something we're calling the rental assistance demonstration, which is to use commonly used real estate financing tools, which have been used on a limited basis by public housing authorities, and use that to get private equity capital money into the portfolio to do more significant repairs or some limited new construction. The way that the money is allocated is you take the congressional appropriation, whatever money Congress has approved in that line item for capital subsidy, and it's all done by formula. So it's based on the number of existing units a particular housing authority has. And so the percentage share that a housing authority gets by formula only changes based on the number of units it has. And it might get more money. The percentage stays the same, but if the dollar appropriated is larger, they would get more money. Likewise, if the dollars appropriated are less, they'll get less money.
These grants are issued annually. Has there been any impact from the economy on the amounts being given?
Not tied to the economy. It's tied to the congressional appropriation. And so based on the president's budget and the ask, in the recent years, what we have seen is that the president's ask in the budget has been higher than what Congress has appropriated.
Once the grants are given, does HUD maintain some oversight on exactly how they're used?
Absolutely. It's our role as regulator, if you will, to make sure that that money is used appropriately and wisely, which most housing authorities absolutely do a fine job. And what happens is housing authorities have a 5 to 7 year capital plan that they have to submit. It's on a rolling basis, and they're able to move some money around if something that they were going to do in year 7 becomes an emergency and they need to do it in year 2, that's fine. But they have to plan how to use the money, what are the projects that will get those capital dollars. All of that gets submitted, not just to us, but housing authorities, have to have a public hearing for the residents in those public housing developments so that residents understand the kind of renovations and rehab that will be happening in their own homes as well. And then housing authorities then spend the capital dollars appropriated according to that plan year after year.
Nationwide, how much grant money from this program has been given out?
On the capital dollars, it was about $2 billion overall. Unfortunately, what that means, however, is when you spread it across about 4,100 public agencies in the nation, and if you know that we have the worst housing needs, we do a study every 2 years on the worst housing needs, and that the number of people in those circumstances who need decent, affordable housing continues to grow every year. And in addition, a recent survey and study we had done in 2012 shows that there's a capital backlog of in excess of $26 billion. And so $2 billion a year, if you do the math, doesn't quite do it, which is why we, as I mentioned earlier, went to the Rental Assistance or RAD initiative to help get private equity into the public housing portfolio so capital work can get done more quickly.
Anything you'd like to add?
I think that we should know that generally the public housing operation in New Mexico has, the overall number of housing authorities has decreased, and that's because housing authorities have decided to merge and do some consolidations, if you will, to make better use of decreasing dollars, but having better economies of scale, and therefore doing business in a different way, which we believe will have better outcomes for residents in the longer term.
Assistant HUD Secretary Sandra Enriquez, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
Santa Fe psychologist Dr. Penelope Penland is pleased to help present KSFR programming. Dr. Penland's diverse practice fosters the emergence of each person's authentic self in all domains of life. Like KSFR, she strives for thoughtful and independent inquiry to foster individual freedom and responsibility in the context of community. Dr. Penelope Penland, 983-3990.
Well, 18 here in the KSFR newsroom as At Noon continues. New Mexico has much to offer fishermen in our state, but some of the behaviors of anglers are damaging the ecology. Joining us now is Toby Velasquez, the Chief of Law Enforcement and Boating Safety with New Mexico State Parks. Toby, the main culprit here, as we understand, is fishing line, correct?
Primarily the monofilament line that's commonly used for fishing. People just take for granted that it doesn't have an impact after they've left it behind, and it really does. It impacts wildlife that can get tangled up in different ways in the lives of wildlife across our state parks and natural areas. It also hurts with the operation of motorboats because it can get into the propulsion systems. So what we're really trying to do is ensure that people understand that their monofilament line is best to be disposed of appropriately and recycled wherever possible.
And the biggest problem is the fact that wildlife often can become entangled in this monofilament line, yes?
I think mostly they get wrapped up in it. At times we've seen monofilament line used to make nests, which was pretty industrial by the birds. However, you know, usually it's a bad situation with monofilament line. For fish, obviously it can get into the aquatic habitat and just tangle things up, gum things up, get in the way, and it really has a negative impact for terrestrial wildlife as well. There's big blobs of monofilament line on the banks, and any species of wildlife could be affected by it. It could get into antlers, it could get around feet. It's just not a good thing to have it out in the environment.
What kind of dangers does the use of lead sinkers present?
Well, the lead sinkers, obviously, you know, we just want to try and remove as much lead products from the natural environment as possible. We don't see as much of a problem with lead sinkers, but we know that it's best to dispose of them properly. And what we really want to do is just get a higher awareness level for our anglers out in our natural areas of New Mexico and primarily in state parks to help educate them and increase their awareness as to how easy it is to dispose of monofilament line and lead sinkers.
It's going to be much easier now to recycle these materials, correct?
Yes, definitely. One of our marine officers and education coordinators, Officer Steven Verchinsky, looked into the program It's a national program that's being done throughout the country. And he was able to get us as one of those agencies that could receive monofilament and lead sinker recycling stations. And so he put us on the map with these stations, so to speak. We have them distributed in multiple state parks, and we're continuing to partner with other federal and state agencies to even get a wider distribution in areas outside of state parks, such as federal recreation areas and state game areas. We have approximately 20 that are out now and more to continue. We want to expand it to every area where anglers may need an option for disposing monofilament light and lead sinkers, and so that they know there's an option for them and that it's readily available, and so that there's no excuses. We give them a good option.
And looking at the overall picture, are New Mexicans good recyclers and stewards of the land?
I give New Mexicans a lot of credit. We spend a lot of time outdoors. People are very aware of the environment. However, just as in anywhere, there's some people that don't. They get lazy from time to time, and or they think someone else is going to pick it up on their behalf. And so I think we have a better mix of people who are really aware of how to handle litter and other issues out in their natural environment, especially in the land of enchantment. However, you know, there's still a percentage of the population that does it, and it's those folks that we want to target and increase their awareness and give them the opportunity to dispose of these items appropriately.
Anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
The best thing is just to remind our fellow New Mexicans and visitors to this beautiful state that state parks are there for their enjoyment. They're the best recreational value close to home. It's very affordable. You can get out to your state parks, catch a fish, watch some osprey, or even draw a mule deer that you saw on the edge of the water. There's so many opportunities in New Mexico State Park. We think it's a great value. It's a great memory. It's one of those quality of life issues that we as New Mexicans have right outside our doorstep in most places. And it's just a few miles away to your next state park. So I encourage everyone to get out and enjoy their New Mexico State Parks.
Toby Velasquez with New Mexico State Parks. Many thanks for sharing some time with us here at KSFR today.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by the Pueblo of Tesuque Flea Market, the flea for over 20 years, hosting local and international vendors dealing in everything from handcrafted imports and old pawn jewelry to specialty foods and garage sale finds. Located at 15 Flea Market Road in Santa Fe, right next to the Opera, the Tesuque Flea is open 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from March through December. For more info, email seetheflea@yahoo.com or visit online at tesuquefleamarket.com.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Propane prices. They rise and fall with the vagaries of the market like any other commodity, but often without the regulations imposed on oil, electricity, and natural gas. With many folks throughout the local area dependent on propane for cooking and heating, price fluctuations can take a toll on household budgets. KSFR News reporter Marion Cox has been speaking with one Santa Fe County resident who decided to stop complaining and instead become proactive. Ann Goodwin Sides formed her own propane buying association some 6 years ago. And what began as a money-saving initiative for her and her immediate neighbors has mushroomed into a large cooperative now negotiating the best price. Here's Marion Cox's report with Ann Goodwin Sides.
Why are you called the Ann Sides Propane Buying Club?
Maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, I'm not absolutely sure when we started this, I found out about a neighborhood association, and they had banded together in order to get a better price for the whole group on propane, which is, for most of us, it is a big chunk of our family expenses. I mean, for my own family, it was more than our taxes. It was more than our homeowner's insurance. It was one of the biggest expenses that we had. And I decided I would spearhead the same for my immediate group of neighbors, and we would see whether or not we could come up with something competitive. I phoned up 4 or 5 providers from out of the phone book, and I asked them if they would like to bid on our neighborhood association, and I told them we were six families, and they each gave us a bid, and we picked the best one and went with that the first year. The second year, I decided I would be more aggressive, and we expanded because word spread that we are getting a better deal, and more neighbors joined in, some of them switching over from other providers. In the early years, we switched back and forth year by year between providers because many of the people who I knew who were my immediate neighbors owned their own propane tanks, which was a big help in being flexible about which provider you went to. This time I actually played the offers off one another, which these propane companies are going to hate to hear. They know that I'm doing this because I've given them an opportunity to respond to their competitors' offers. And then that took a little longer each time.
So how do you know if you're coming up with a good price on behalf of your buying club members?
Well, I think I'm more educated year by year about the whole propane market and what drives it. In recent years, a member joined who had proprietary access to the pricing out of the refineries. With that proprietary knowledge, I turned back to the propane distributors to say, you know, now I know what you're paying, and I know what a healthy profit is. Ferrellgas was pretty frank with us about what their costs are per gallon as they distribute it out across their whole, you know, membership. Anyway, we've come, every year they've come down and down in the profit margin that they're willing to accept as our group has grown.
So you started with roughly six families. You're now at 180 families and
it's
growing.
Nutty.
You are negotiating price based in part upon proprietary information that some member of your group has about wholesale and retail prices of propane. You then negotiate a profit margin with, and I think it's okay for us to say the current provider is Ferrellgas. What's your advice to people in Santa Fe County that either are not part of a propane buying club or feel they're being ripped off or may want to join your group?
Yes, our group is not at capacity and we're welcoming new people because as we bring in more customers every year, we get a better deal. I'm able to negotiate a lower and lower price. What I'd really like to see is for the state of New Mexico to start regulating propane. All of this should be public information. It shouldn't be based on one person's proprietary access to the pricing.
The natural gas industry is regulated. The propane industry is not regulated. In the state of New Mexico, does an individual state have the ability to regulate something like commerce in propane?
Yes, absolutely. I believe Colorado does publish their numbers, and I believe that Texas also publishes their numbers. So I think other states are regulating it and making it public information.
So I think the bottom line here is buyer beware. There are now propane buying clubs being established. People are getting within these clubs far better rates than those of us that are trying to buy individually. There's also some consolidation in the markets occurring, so there are fewer propane suppliers out there in Santa Fe than there were 5 years ago.
Exactly. Lobby your elected officials, but also form your own group because you are as strong as your numbers and you do have clout, and it just takes one person being the mouthpiece, which I guess is what I've become.
That was KSFR news reporter Marion Cox speaking with Ann Goodwin Sides. And At Noon on KSFR, we'll be back in just a moment.
Support comes from the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe. Your child's curiosity about the existence of God, the meaning of life, and good and evil should be nurtured and respected. At the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Santa Fe, both child and curiosity are honored. Learn more at uusantafe.org.
1229 here at KSFR. The Santa Fe Police Department has introduced a new feature on the web to help keep residents aware of what's going on in their neighborhood. Here's KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
The Santa Fe Police Department has been working diligently the last few years to find ways to help communication between citizens and the department. Now a new web-based site will give citizens access to reports on crimes being dealt with by the police department. Selena Westervelt is with the department and describes the new Hot Sheet program.
So this was a request from the public that wanted to be able to to know more about what's going on in Santa Fe and in their neighborhoods, what we've decided to do is put the hot sheets, which are our reports from every police report has a face sheet, and that sheet goes into a book at the police station. And that happens nationwide, every police department. And that book is then public record so that anybody can come in, look, find the hot sheet, look for your specific report if you had filed one, look at maybe your neighbor's address if you wanted to see what went on the night before. So now we've decided, because they are public records, we're going to put them online and make them easier for people to find. So anybody that wants to look at them doesn't have to come down to the police station anymore. They can go to city's website, look under police, look under hot sheets, and they can view their hot sheets daily.
Not every police call will result in a hot sheet.
Everything that is made that you'd have to make a report on. So sometimes that's suspicious activity if it's severe enough. Sometimes it's, I found this wallet and I need to make a report that I found it. So that way, if somebody comes and claims it, they know where to go looking for it. But it's going to be all violent crimes, so any arrests, and then just whatever else might be going on in the area.
The new site will make tracking any reports you may have given to the police much simpler.
Lots of people, when they want to follow up on their cases, they either have lost that case number or they don't really remember those types of things. So now, if they remember the date when it happened, they can go look at that date and then find the sheet, pull the case number, and be able to give the officer more information. They can even print that one case and then have that paperwork in front of them. Now, because they are public record, they are redacted. So personal information is not there. And sometimes you might need that full report for a insurance claim or whatever might be happening. But at least you have the case number and it's a place to start.
The online access to these records is becoming popular around the nation.
And it's becoming more and more common just because, like I said, it is public information and people don't always like to have coming down to the stations to get it. But, you know, we're definitely the first in the area that's doing it this way.
In addition to information needed for insurance reports, there are other uses for the website.
So if people just see something that's going on in their neighborhood, maybe there was police activity last night, three doors down, and you kind of wanted to know what that was about. It's a good way to check on that and see. Maybe it wasn't in the news. It wasn't a big enough story to be in the news, but you can still go find that information. It's going to be a good tool for landlords to be able to check on their properties. The tenant next door says that there's something going on at 24C. Well, let me go and check that hot sheet, see what it was, and see if it needs to be dealt with further. And just general knowledge. Police department reports burglaries are down. Well, I'm going to go look at the hot sheets and see where the burglaries are happening. And just different things that can be used to inform the public.
There's still a few bugs to be worked out with the system.
So we are still working out some of the bugs. Right now, the file sizes are a bit large, so it takes a little bit of time to download them. We're also working with our officers on sometimes they redact too much information. So we're working on retraining that process, and then I double check all the redactions to make sure that nothing personal goes online. So it's not completely 100% yet, but still something that we want people to get familiar with and be able to use.
Selena Westervelt with the Santa Fe Police Department. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
12:34 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, presents the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Okay, I was not at the reportedly contentious KSFR board meeting as reported by reporters and local newspapers. I did read the reports reported by the reporters, but if you asked me to report on the reports reported by the reporters, I would have to report that I don't know what was going on. In the reports reported by the reporters, all right already, I won't say that again, it did seem to me that whatever room the KSFR board meeting was in, it certainly wasn't big enough for all the egos in the room. One person who was quoted spoke about how important the producers and volunteers are to KSFR. Of course they are. I've been a volunteer here for 300 years, and I consider it a privilege. I don't have demands. I don't have rights. I just have an obligation to repay the privilege of being on KSFR by giving you the best I have. I try. Thank you for being here with me. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity here at the news desk with you, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Marion Cox and Charles Maynard. And we'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you. And as always, we hope you join us.